There's little doubt that the internet is one of the most powerful tools in the terrorist arsenal. ISIS has used social media to recruit fighters and inspire lone wolf attacks. So what to do about it? Well, we've got two opinions. Start with Neil Johnson, a physicist at the University of Miami. He led a team of scientists that created a mathematical model, not to find the single terrorist or the needle in the haystack, but to find patterns that might predict attacks. He joins us now by Skype. Professor Johnson, this is interesting. We know police in Chicago are using an algorithm to try to find young people who might be perpetrators of or victims of violence before it happens. This is a trend of sorts.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. There are plenty of great programs trying to look at individuals or maybe particular target groups. But what we found is instead of worrying about that whole haystack and instead of having to worry about that one needle that you think might become important in the future, what we found is actually the data told us that these needles, if you like to use the analogy, they group together. They group together in a very specific way on the internet. And they do it in a way that, I mean, it changes over time. They adapt. It's very much, it's like an ecology. And that's what we found. And so it shifts the focus from individuals or from target groups over to the dynamics of these groups.
Well, this is fascinating. You say the tracking of terrorists is, as you say, there's an ecology. So we should take our cues from nature, the way, for instance, birds flock. And we have spoken to researchers before who have, for instance, looked at how, you know, birds flock and form patterns to study bicyclists in Vietnam. You know, that everything seems to go in this kind of, well, you explain it, this organic wave.
Yeah, I mean, precisely. I mean, birds don't talk to each other and say, well, okay, you go to the left, I'll go to the right, and then somebody else will fill in the middle. It's a self-organized pattern, and that's exactly what we found emerging. And the good thing is that there's an awful lot that we already know about such self-organized systems. And in fact, all we did was adapt some mathematics that was already known to reproduce exactly the patterns of pro-ISIS groups, these groups as they change over time, that we found on the internet.
Well, but, okay, a couple questions. I understand the birds flocking. If you've ever watched them, it is extraordinary. But on the internet, you can't see each other. So how do they have the same organic feel?
Yeah, it's exactly right, of course. The internet, it's a virtual world. But what they do is they tend to flock around themes. And they tend to flock around identities. These groups that we find online, some may be exchanging information about drones. In another group, they may be focusing on particular places in Eastern Europe where they're thinking that security may be weak. And so what you see is, it's in some sense, it's the equivalent of that, but it's in a very specific way. And with one very big difference, these groups online have predators. There are anti-ISIS, I mean, there are hackers, there are groups, there are agencies that are after them. And so what happens is every so often they completely fragment and they scatter and they then reform in different places. And it's that dynamic of the reforming and the building up, first of all, which we managed to describe mathematically, but second, which we can then use to understand ideas related to things like, for example, the so-called lone wolf.
Well, and you say that what we've learned is that the so-called lone wolf, the self-starting terrorist sympathizer, doesn't remain a lone wolf for long. He joins one of these small groups. You studied about 200 small groups, 100,000 members combined, but they had been lone wolves.
Yeah, so anyone who is observed, imagine just taking a snapshot of, we come back to our analogy of the fish, take a snapshot, you see one fish. Yeah, but that fish at some stage in the past was part of a group. If you leave it long enough, you track it long enough, it will become part of another group, maybe even momentarily, but it will become part of a group. In the context of the pro-ISIS groups that we studied, this is very important, because if we could track then the equivalent of that so-called lone wolf, which group they've been in, we would know which specific material that they were exposed to. Was it the beheadings material? Was it this discussion of security in airports? We would have a better sense of maybe where that individual was heading.
I can hear someone saying, well, wait a second, why are you studying these people? Why don't you let someone know where they are and stop them?
You know, this is a very, and you hit it very well yourself. You know, suddenly we're talking about birds and fish, and, you know, then we're talking about pro-ISIS support. It doesn't sound very conventional. This type of science, which is very, you know, I stand by this science, but it's kind of new for this field. And like any new thing, I think it will take a while to get adopted. I hope not too long.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, our experience, I think experience of many scientists when trying to deal with policy, is not necessarily that that is such an easy task.
Neil Johnson, a physicist at the University of Miami, who's led a team of researchers that created a mathematical model to try to understand terrorists and their sympathizers online. Neil, Professor, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And so it sounds like Professor Johnson is trying to get someone to listen to his work on patterns of terrorist interaction. But let's turn to a researcher who's looking for the needle in the haystack. Hani Farid is a professor of computer science at Dartmouth College, a senior advisor to the Counter-Extremism Project. That's a nonpartisan policy group. And Professor Farid backs a new technology that's meant to make it easier for internet companies to instantly find and remove specific pictures and videos used as terrorist propaganda. But will those technology companies want to? He joins us from New York. Professor Farid, welcome.
Good to be here.
And first of all, what exactly are you doing or hoping to do?
Yeah, so what we're hoping to do and what we've done actually is develop technology that can extract from an image, a video, or an audio recording a distinct signature. And that signature allows us to automatically and efficiently and accurately remove any content that is deemed inappropriate. So that is, once a technology company says this video of a beheading or a call to violence is inappropriate and does not belong on our network, we extract the signature from that video or audio, and we now say anytime something gets uploaded, it gets compared against that, and if it's the same thing, then it gets removed. And essentially what we're doing is removing the whack-a-mole game that we play with this type of content. It appears, it stays up for a while, it comes down, and it pops up again, and we now have technology that allows us to eliminate it forever on the companies that participate in this program.
So that answers one of the questions people might have, which is free speech. Right now, Google and other companies already are eliminating content that they feel is inappropriate. So it's not as if you're going in there as the policeman and saying this is inappropriate. It's the companies that are.
That's exactly right. We are saying the companies have the right under terms of service to expunge any material that they deem unfit for their network. We are saying you don't have to do that manually anymore, or you have to do it manually once, and then we can come in and do that automatically for you.
Government officials in the U.S., we understand, see potential, but companies like Google and Twitter are expressing some questions about maybe a slippery slope. What if there's an ISIS flag and a news organization or a security firm might be using it for non-propaganda but maybe instructive reasons, and suddenly, boop, your technology removes it?
That's right, and that's the right question to ask. So what we are talking about is, in fact, only starting with what we call the worst of the worst. These are clearly extremely violent, clear violations of the terms of service for these various social media sites. Now, as you start to approach the line that you just described, you are going to have some very difficult and important discussions about what is and what is not appropriate content for your network. We are agnostic. The technology is agnostic. I do think that those questions are important to have, however, and I think you need to have all the players at the table to have those conversations. But when we deployed a similar technology in the child exploitation space, we had these very similar conversations of, well, what if it's somebody who looks like they're underage, and, you know, what if it's maybe not exactly sexually explicit, but it's close to being sexually explicit. And what we said is we are going to stay very clear from that line. We are going to remove content that is clearly 100% everybody agrees child pornography. And that way you stay away from those sort of dangerous lines that you don't want to get too close to.
And by the way, how long have you been doing that, removing child pornography?
Right. So back in 2008, I worked with Microsoft and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to develop a similar technology to what we are talking about today in the child exploitation space that is now being used worldwide. And we are now developing new technologies to handle video and audio as well as images. And so there is a precedent for this type of technology already working on these sites.
Yeah. Well, and one can see how, you know, get that stuff off. It's horrendous. But also, it's a way to find children. I'm thinking in that case, So, you know, I guess the question applies to any kind of removal of information. Isn't it removing something that, as horrendous as it is, could be in some way informative?
I think you're right. When we deployed this technology in the child exploitation space, we were told by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that just gathering the statistics, just getting real data on where these images are coming from, how are they being distributed, what is the source, who is producing this, is incredibly informative. So I've heard the argument that when you take it down, you make it more difficult for law enforcement. I don't think that's true, because when we take it down, we actually have information. Who posted it? When? Where did it come from? Where is it being rebroadcast?
And
so there's
that,
a huge
yeah.
amount of information that we still have. We don't throw away that information.
Yeah. Well, and now you're applying that thinking to terrorism online. Hani Farid, professor of computer science at Dartmouth College and senior advisor to the nonpartisan Counter-Extremism Project. Professor Farid, thank you so much.
Thank you.